From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of October, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel from AgMarket.net. We'll hear some advice about tax planning from the folks at Illinois FBF. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the broader context of the commodity markets, that issue that's happening on the Mississippi River, and also what to expect from WASDE with Frayn Olson from North Dakota State University Extension. He's an agricultural economics and commodity market specialist based in Fargo. And it all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today settled at $6.98 and a quarter. That was up 15 cents. The March at 7.04 and three quarters, 13 and three quarters higher. And May corn at 7.05 and three quarters, up 13 and a quarter. November beans 7 higher, settled $13.74. The January 13.85 and three quarters, up 6.5. And March soybeans 6 and a quarter higher, at $13.95 and a quarter. The bean meal up $5, and the bean oil for the day 54 cents lower. Wheat futures finished 57 and three quarters of a cent higher at $9.38 for the soft red. The hard red at $10.24 and a quarter, up 55.5 cents. Live cattle futures at $147, down $1 and a nickel for the day. Feeder cattle at $172.87 and a half, $2.75 lower, and lean hogs at 100 pounds $79.60, $2.45. Crude oil $91.49 a barrel, up about $1.13. Diesel fuel around 8 6/10 of a cent lower. Crude oil down $1.15, by the way, as opposed to higher for the day. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at around 29,255, about 100 points lower. Here to talk about the numbers and what's been happening in the marketplace is Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Glad to be here for a nice sunny Monday as we look for a little moisture here as we move into Tuesday, Wednesday.
And it does look like there might be a little pause in the action. I bet farmers would like that, as they have been fairly busy. They'll want to catch up on some marketing in that process, maybe too, if they need to. I would like to start by discussing what's happened in the wheat market. I think that drove the corn higher, and I saw the soybeans backed off. About half of their gains from the overnight trade. Is that right?
Yeah, we saw some fairly active markets. The overnight trade was a little higher, and market held in there fairly well. Then, but after an hour of trade, hour and 15 minutes after trade, it all heck broke loose. There was some footage of Russian bridge being bombed, and it took a good chunk of it out. I think there's still one lane open, and the commentary out of the Russian news media was not very positive about that. They called that act of terrorism. Well, I think I don't know how Russia can get by with bombing the heck out of Ukraine, but when somebody retaliates and does something to Russia, all of a sudden it's an issue. But they retaliated. They sent quite a few missiles into the Ukrainian area during their rush hour, which is, you know, kind of devastating. I've not seen any footage of where they actually hit and what destruction took place, but that ramped up the war premium. Wheat futures trade is almost to 70 cents higher, and that pushed the market. Rest of the markets followed along and moved higher in tandem with it somewhat. And as we moved through the day, the market kind of cooled off. But the other thing, positive-wise, Russia's back from their week-long holiday. Not Russia, but China. China's back from their holiday. And there's ideas that maybe they will be buying some additional U.S. beans in through here. Just the fact their crushing margins are real strong. They've got quite a few hogs to be feeding in through here. So the trade be eager to see if we'll see some movement there. Also, too, the river situation, they were able to dredge out underneath a few of those stranded barges there. And so they opened up a little bit of the waterway there for northbound traffic. And so it looks like we could probably see a little movement, but we need some moisture. the problem is south of St. Louis. The Illinois seems to be in fairly good shape. But what happens is I believe about 60% of the water going down the Mississippi comes from the west there, the Missouri River particularly. And even though we got a little rain in the forecast, I don't know if it's going to be enough to help raise the water levels. So we're in the time window in here where rain events are kind of on the skimpy side. So they'll continue to monitor that river system and the barge traffic that's spurred a lot of activity in the rail side of it. So the commercial grain guys, have been quite busy here trying to figure out logistics about all the trains are fairly well spoken for until we move into the first year. Then the other thing, too, the Western Wheat Belt continues to remain dry. There's some producers holding off here on wheat seedings until they get a little moisture to work with. But the old saying is, sow and dust and watch the bins bust. So we'll see.
There are three USDA reports of note this week on Wednesday, at 11 a.m. Central. The crop production numbers are due out along with the monthly world agricultural supply and demand estimates. And of course, they'll update crop progress and what harvest progress looks like across the Midwest. What do we know about those reports from the trade and their expectations?
Okay, the crop progress report all day long, I'd say that'd be out today, but today was Columbus Day holiday, so we'll see where we are tomorrow afternoon for harvest progress. Locally, boy, there's some areas that's really gotten with it. There's going to be some areas pretty well done with beans, maybe half done with some corn, but moisture readings are coming down, so we look for that harvest to continue to move along. As a nation, the trade estimate for corn progress is about 32 to 35% complete, and soybeans about 44 to 48 percent complete there. Weather's just been idea, and we'll continue to see producers keep moving along in through here. As far as the Wednesday's report goes, the trade estimate is look for a little lower corn yield, just a slightly higher bean yield. When you look at the carryout estimates, the corn carryouts, the average trade guess, depends which survey you look at, suspect to be about 1.126, and the soybean carryout estimates expected to be about 245 million bushels, up about 45 million bushels from last report due to the fact that grain stocks report showed a few more bean inventories around. South American crop, I don't think we're going to probably move it around a whole lot. They're still getting started plantings. The trade's still kind of dialed into a record Brazilian bean production number. Brazil plantings are taking place. They're directly 6 months opposite of us, so they're starting to make some headway there as they put the crop in the ground. The Argentines, they'll be a little later, but they're a little bit drier. And so once we get that crop in the ground, the focus will be towards South American weather after we get through Wednesday's report here.
Hey, thank you much.
Very good. Take care, Todd.
I will. You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. Kurt's colleague, by the way, Matt Bennett, will join us Thursday of this week here on campus as we move into the homecoming weekend for University of Illinois. He'll be on a panel with Scott Irwin and Joe Jansen at around 10 a.m. near the McFarland Bell Tower. That's on the South Quad, not too far from Mumford Hall, right there in the agricultural campus, to join Tyne Morgan and the crew from U.S. Farm Report for a live-to-tape college roadshow event. You can come. It'll be open and free. I will be there along with a class of the ACE 100 students, about 170 of them, and maybe even a few of the Marching Illini. That's at 10 o'clock on Thursday morning near the Bell Tower on South Campus. While you're in the combine, you probably ought to be thinking about taxes and how to manage some of the risk that comes along with incomes like you may very well have this year. Krista Robertson is with the Illinois FBFM, the Illinois Farm Business Farm Management Association, works in the Watsika office. I spoke with her last week and asked her what kinds of things producers really need to consider and what kind of data they ought to be gathering or think about gathering as they set in the combine seat this fall.
Yeah, of course, we're collecting acres and bushels here at the end of the year, but the one that's at the top of my mind, thinking about the next item I need to check off my list to help clients with their financials, is tax planning. So I'm asking them to think about what expenses do they know they will incur between now and the end of the year? What bills do they have to pay, first of all? And then from a tax planning perspective, you know, we're looking at pretty high incomes this year again. We're wondering what prepays are available out there for them. So could they be making some phone calls from the combine, asking their vendors for inputs, what those costs are going to be, as in how much is fertilizer going to cost an acre for me and how much of that can I afford to prepay, seed dealers, getting seed costs locked in, that sort of thing.
And that'll help them then bring down this year's tax bill.
Yeah, so that's the goal, of course. We want to be strategic about where our income is every year. That's why we do tax planning. That doesn't mean we want to pay zero taxes. It just means we want to be strategic about that. And one thing I've been telling all of my clients this year is we need to take advantage of these really relatively low income tax brackets that we have right now. We've got high incomes. We've got a lot of deferred tax liability, especially for my older clients. And we have really low income tax brackets that I don't think are going to stick around for all that long. So it would be a good year to pay some tax.
Now, farmers in the tax area can roll parts of their income forward and backward. How does that happen, and what suggestions do you have?
So farmers are very specific taxpayers. They have some real special rules, one of which is the ability to use income averaging. No other operating business has that opportunity. And how income averaging works is we look back over the last 3 years of your income, your taxable income, and if you have only filled up, let's say, the 22% tax bracket, and this year we decide we're just going to have a big income, we're going to bite the bullet and pay some tax, we can actually take income that might have been taxed at the 37% tax bracket and go back and fill up maybe the 26% tax bracket over the last 3 years. It's a little complicated calculation, but any experienced tax preparer would be more than happy to help work through those calculations with you, and will save you a significant amount of tax.
And how do they contact the FBFM to have that farm tax preparer in place?
Sure. We have FBFM offices scattered all over the state of Illinois. You're welcome to hop on our website, fbfm.org, and take a look at all of the office locations. Call our 800 number and we'll get you hooked up with the most local office. And happy to work with any farmers out there needing services that we can provide.
Krista Swanson is with the Illinois FBFM. She's in the Watsika office. However, their office is across the state of Illinois, and you can always find links to them at fbfm.org. That stands for Farm Business, Farm Management. .org. Hey, now, coming up in November, I want you to put this in your calendar. We've not started selling tickets just yet, but we'll have everything up on our website sometime yet this week, is the Farm Assets Conference. This will be held at the iHotel here on the Urbana-Champaign campus on the 21st day of the month of November. That's the Monday, the week of Thanksgiving. I know you'll want to come and see us. We'll be talking about carbon markets and about Brazil as it relates to competition. The FarmDoc team will be there to talk about the Farm Bill, including Nick Paulson, Jonathan Coppas, and Mary Kay Thatcher will be there. You might recognize her name from the American Farm Bureau Federation. She is with Syngenta now and works in governmental and industry relations. You'll want to hear about the 2023 Farm Bill and other policies from the three of them. We'll talk about Ukraine and Russia, fertilizer and crop budgets on that 21st day of November with Gary Schnitke and Josh Linville. Gary, of course, with the University of Illinois. Josh Linville, you might know from StoneX. He's their fertilizer expert and analyst. And then after lunch, we'll take up the supply and demand tables with Scott Irwin and Joe Jansen from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Again, part of the FarmDoc team. And then we'll be joined by a set of brokers and others that are graduates from the University of Illinois, including Matt Bennett, Ben Coon, Wayne Nelson, and others. So you'll want to be here for that discussion about the marketplace. Aaron Hager will be there. Nick Sider and Giovanni Fontes, who is the new University of Illinois agronomist, to talk about crop production issues. And we'll wrap things up with Bruce Sherrick on that 21st day of November. We'll talk about the price of farmland. He'll be joined by Luke Worrell of Worrell Land Services out of Jacksonville. More details later this week at willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We are now joined by Frayne Olson. He's with NDSU Extension, North Dakota State University Extension, where he's a crop economics and risk management specialist. Hi, Frayne. Thank you for being with us. There's a lot of risk to manage, it appears, out there at this point. But let's start with crop conditions and harvest in the North Dakota-Minnesota region. What are crops like?
Yeah, we're just kind of getting started on our soybean harvest. There's a few fields of corn been taken off. I know earlier we had talked about we in this northern plains, because we had such a delayed planting this last spring that we really needed a nice September to be able to catch up on some growing degree days and make sure we finish this crop off. And fortunately, we did get that. We actually had our first statewide killing frost last week. I think most of the crop, especially for soybeans, as well as most of the corn, made it. There might be a few odd fields out there that had some damage to it, but the vast majority of the corn and soybeans made it from a maturity standpoint. For corn, that's a really nice thing because, you know, drying bills would have been pretty horrendous had we had an early frost. One of the things that also pushed this development along was that we started drying out. When you look at the drought monitor map across the state, most of the state is showing some kind of drought at this point. Again, that pushed both the corn and the soybeans along. And the concern we have right now, at least really early reports out of soybeans, are average yields to maybe a little below average. And I think part of that was because we did get some drier conditions. Those top pods in the beans in those pods didn't quite fully fill. I think we might see a little bit of the same problem when we get into corn harvest, that we might have a little bit of lighter test weights because those final kernels didn't quite make it to the end. They will be dry and they'll be mature, but we might get a little lighter test weight because of the drought conditions.
All right, let's talk about the WASDE report and the crop production figures, which are due out at 11 o'clock Central Time Wednesday from the United States. You can simply put those numbers from the grain stocks report into some of these and get an idea of what's coming. But there's an awfully tight look for corn, and I guess soybeans has gotten better. What are your estimates coming into this?
Yeah, I usually rely on some of the pre-report industry estimates. You know, there's a survey that's done by a lot of the major news agencies to try and give us an idea of what the you know, larger analysts and some of the traders might be thinking coming into this report. And you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, I think the biggest change will be on the wheat side. I know you don't have a lot of folks in your area that do wheat, but that balance sheet has tightened up quite a bit, not only because of some, the carry-in numbers, but more importantly, we had the small grains report that came out, and production estimates, total production estimates for wheat were down a little bit harder than I think most people expected. We are seeing some tightening on the corn side, the corn balance sheet, not only for ending stocks numbers, which came out of the quarterly grain stocks report. Those numbers feed into what are a final ending stocks for last marketing year. But again, I think there's going to be, the trade is expecting some slight tightening on the yield numbers. Again, I'm attributing some of that to potentially lighter test weights because we do see in the Western Corn Belt some drier conditions showing up later in the season. Now, we had a tightening of the soybean stocks earlier this year, and now it looks like that's refilling a little bit. Again, still, in my opinion, very tight stocks on soybeans, even though we have a little bit more of a breathing room. So this should get kind of interesting now. Everybody's going to be focusing on those production numbers, obviously, but I'm also looking for some minor adjustments on the usage side. So the demand base, as we look forward, there's, you know, the supply side, but also have the demand side. And one of the concerns that's starting to show up now a little bit is, especially for soybeans, how aggressive will the Chinese be in their soybean buying coming out of the U.S., anticipating a very, very large crop out of Brazil? You know, we are usually kind of filling gap between the soybean crop that they produced last year versus the soybean crop they're going to produce this coming year. And so we have a tight window here in the U.S. where we're kind of the place to come for a lot of soybeans. And soybean demand base coming out of China has been a little weaker than we've seen the last several years. They haven't had that growth opportunity, the growth or expansion that we've seen over time. So it looks as though the demand base out of soybeans is flattening. So I'm also watching that pretty closely.
We'll have those numbers again Wednesday at 11 o'clock Central. You can find them on our website at willag.org. And I have the trade estimates up there at this point as it relates to the corn, the soybeans, and the wheat. Let's talk about a different subject, and I think this will impact your area as well. What does it mean for the lower Mississippi River to be closed to barge traffic, or at least very slow for barge traffic at this point?
Yeah, and it is a big concern. It is something that I am really concerned about, even for Northern Plains logistical systems. And the reason I'm looking at that is obviously we're coming into the peak export season. When you look at the volumes that are shipped, that October, November, December time period is what they call the gut of the export season, just because there's a lot of pre-sales that need to be filled. There's a lot of selling from farmers off the combine. Buyers recognize that. So we tend to see some very, very heavy grain shipments, seasonal grain shipments at this point. Rule of thumb, about 60% of our corn and soybean exports, soybeans in particular, probably a little higher than that for corn, come out of the Gulf, U.S. Gulf. So barge traffic at this time of year is critical. And one of the challenges we have is that it's the lower Mississippi River that has the lower water levels. It's not the upper Mississippi, which is going to impact only a portion of the supply chain, but the lower Mississippi, which really feeds into those New Orleans ports or the Gulf ports, are really that's the choke point right now. And so if we can't get grain shipped by barge, or the grain volumes start to drop off significantly because lower water levels, they can't have as many, the tows aren't as large, and they can't fill the barges as heavy as they normally would because the water levels are lower. We've got sandbars popping up, which makes navigation a little difficult. The next best alternative would be to try and get some higher volumes from grain for rail shipments. And the problem we have right now from talking to some of the rail shippers, they have the cars available, they have locomotives available, but they're very tight yet on crews. They've been trying to get the crew availability up as quickly as possible to get ready for the grain harvest. But if there's not enough grain rail crews to go around, we start rationing those, and that can have spillover effects not only for the southern part of the U.S., but can also have some spillover effects for us here in the north, in particular shipping into that PNW market, which is really a rail market from our perspective.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to visit, and I really enjoy it.
Same with you. That's Frey Nolson. He is with North Dakota State University Extension. Will join us again, by the way, on Thursday of this week to record Commodity Week. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report.